Harry Huxhold. I'm a pastor of the AELC and the inner city congregation in Indianapolis in the Union. This morning we'd like to talk about the transition teams and task forces that are very essential for us in working towards the creation of the New Lutheran Church. And this topic was suggested by the fact that we have several people in the village right now who are members of such task forces or transition teams. So I'd like to share some of their experiences and concerns. Before we do that, though, I'd just like to comment on something that struck me yesterday as we were listening to Walter Langren Jr. Talking about his experience in prep school in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And that offers an insight as to differences in the three Lutheran bodies that I think that we ought to take the time to just mention in passing. Elmer Witt and I both attended the same prep school that Walter went to. We thought we had done enough cane raising for them to close down the place before people like Walter had to get there, but we didn't get the job done. But what's interesting about that system was that these schools were patterned after the gymnasia in Germany. It was the 4 years of high school, 2 years of college. They really didn't think of the pattern that we have in the United States at all. But the reason for the creation of these schools in the Missouri Synod was the intent to have a well-trained clergy. And the church at that time was principally rural, and there were not good educational systems for high schools at that time in many of the rural areas served by the church. So this was a way of guaranteeing that there would be good pre-seminary training. So the people were recruited already at the confirmation class level. Young people like Walter described, 13 years old, being shipped off to these schools. And the intention was that these were going to be the educated people in the church. Those prep schools for the seminary and then also the teacher colleges were the same in the Missouri Synod. Now, what was so striking about that experience is that it made for a very homogeneous clergy. The people were together for 6 years at the prep school, and then later 3 years at the seminary, and then even still later 4 years at the seminary. So it made for a very homogeneous system. Now, of course, that's by the boards. You don't recruit people at age 13 anymore. Vocational decisions are made much later, so it makes for some difference. But that system, plus the parochial school system in the Missouri Synod, made for a very homogeneous church. And if we look at the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, we can understand then why they have some of the feelings that they do about training in the church and also about their attitudes over against other churches. So that's very, very important to understand that. Now, by comparison, we look at the experience in the LCA and the ALC, and that was quite different. The ALC made principally up the Norwegian church and the German churches that developed systems where they put all of their emphasis upon colleges. And this is why we have the series of colleges that are church-owned by the ALC. Now, you didn't have that in the Missouri Synod. You had just the schools that were preparing people for the professions. Valparaiso University was an independent school of Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, but not a part of its system. So that made some for some real differences. Now, we have to understand that when we're talking about the creation of a new Lutheran church, that we don't bring that kind of system along. That's just not a part of it. So we have to devise ways and means of talking about how we're going to relate to the church-related colleges and seminaries. That's be something we'll talk about tomorrow. And I just thought I would mention that by way of that marvelous experience yesterday, that stunning portrayal of what happened in those prep schools. It was the survival of the fittest, you know. Walter told us how he had to develop a system to be able to live within that system. Some of us got by with just a good sense of humor, you know. It was the only way you could do it. Elmer Witt and I started out with a class in our freshman year of high school of 48 people. Of that 48, only 18 survived, you know. Now, we graduated 42, but some came in at the college level or a little later in the system. But it was something to be able to survive that. But then again, those who did survive, that made for this homogenous clergy that I was talking about. Now we want to talk about transition teams. The goal of the transition teams, of course, is to see to it that we make a smooth transition from being what we are today, the ALC and the LCA, with districts in the ALC and synods in the LCA and synods in the AELC. They all have workers at the present time. Each of them has a bishop at the present time. They have staffs, deployed staffs in the LCA, district staffs in the ALC. So how are we going to work this so that we can begin on January 1, 1988 without losing a stitch? Well, the purpose will be for us to be able to put in place programs and staffs that will be able to pick it up without losing anything. We also want to ensure that we be able to maintain the kind of ministries that are in place now. We think of some of those ministries as being very vulnerable. We think of a campus ministry, for example, that's dependent upon not simply the very local funds of a congregation, but dependent upon larger groups and all kinds of groups. Or we think of chaplaincies that are maintained in some of the institutions, or we think of the missions that we have that are dependent upon subsidies. How are we going to be able to maintain those unless we are sure that there's going to be some money to continue that? So that's part of the problem. Then, of course, we also realize that as we create some of these new synods, which will be brand spanking new, that some of the old synods will go by the boards. And what are we going to do with those staffs? We have to see to it that there are proper severance pay and recognition of those people. How will we be able to do this? So the transition teams and task forces are created for that reason. Now, let's try to think through together some of the functions that you would assign to a transition team. What would be some of the concerns that you would like to see handled? What kind of task forces would you create if you were a part of this operation now to ensure the proper transition? What would be some of the concerns that you would want to be handled?
Kind of committees you mentioned one.
Right.
How are you going to make use of the personnel?
You have to have a personnel committee, right? You have to do that, and that may mean hiring new personnel, it may mean taking on some of the old personnel, but at any rate, you have to have personnel. So, okay. What else do you think of?
How about just the system, the financial system?
All right, so we have to have finances. We have to put together a budget, right? And we have to know what this is going to cost right off the bat, don't we? When are we going to pay the bishop? When are we going to pay the secretary? When are we going to pay deployed staff, whatever we hire? Right? So we have to have a budget for that. So the finance committee has to be there. And has to be have to create a system so that we can start and put some funds into that right away. That's correct. So there.
I don't know, this sounds kind of flippant, but I think we should have someone in charge of a garage sale to sell off a whole bunch of junk that we don't need.
All right.
And I don't know how that should be done, but when you talk about transition, it sounds like bringing in the movers to move everything, and I think we should sell some of it.
Okay.
let's think of, you know, situations where the new synod will be in a completely different location than the other one was, and it's not a matter of just moving. They may own a building. They have to sell the building and sell.
It's not only property, but it's ideas and ways of being the church that we should leave behind.
There's some, there'd be just extra baggage right now, right?
Yeah.
Right.
It's worn out.
Right. Okay. So what do you want to call your committee?
Well, I was thinking about words, and I wish we were talking about a transformation team instead of a transition team.
Okay. Transform.
To transform, if we take seriously the new Lutheran Church, rather than bringing the old Lutheran Church and putting a new stamp on it, then we're talking about transformation.
Okay. Now, in our particular transition team, we do have a task force that we call Mission and Ministry, which is dealing just what you're talking about. And it's to create ways of being able to look at the mission and ministry of the church at this time and this place, right? So we'll call that Mission and Ministry.
Right.
They are to think anew what it means to be in the church. So Mission and Ministry, okay? We're not going to be just what we were before. That's the point of it. In connection with that, then what would be the next step also that we'd have to think about as far as task forces are concerned? And think through what we want to be, what would be essential also?
The training of the people?
But we're going to have something for education there too. I'd like to see one before that. Yeah. What are we going to have to develop for the new center? What do we have to have?
Goals.
Goals, okay, where are we going to put all that? Where are we going to put all of that? Into what? What do you have to have?
Mission statement.
That would be under mission and ministry. Right?
Constitution.
Right, you got to get a constitution, you got it. Now that's one that I always have problems with. I came up here prepared to do a series on the Corinthian church, but I found out that I was supposed to be talking about the new Lutheran church instead. But what I find exciting about the Corinthian study and the reading on that area now is that there was no formal constitution for dealing with all of those problems, you know. That the church had to regulate itself out of the gospel rather than out of law. But we do have to have a constitution. We get down to it, we got to say, how long are people going to serve on the board? How many, where do they have to be from in order to serve on the boards and so on? We do have to have a constitution and bylaws. You can't get by without it. Yeah, Kim.
Basically, I think you just touched on what I was thinking of. The constitution will be adopted nationally, I guess. I'm thinking of by the national convention. And we'll be involved in our transition teams with the bylaws for our own synods. Is that not accurate?
No, there's also a model for synods.
Yeah, is that model form for synods?
There is a constitution for the national church, then there's a model for synods.
I know where I'm hung up. Part of that model for synods, those are required.
Sure.
And some are optional, so that's right.
The synods, for example, will decide just how many commissions they're going to have, which areas they're going to deal with, they'll have that problem.
And some of the items, though, are required through the national church.
So there is a model, there's also a model constitution for congregations, but we'll talk about that tomorrow when we talk about ministry in the Lutheran church. But there does have to be a constitution, so we need a constitution committee. What other kind of committees would you?
Representation?
Representation will be there also under the Constitution. That will be indicated that, again, you have to have the percentages that we're talking about, the quotas that we're talking about for the national church. You know, 60% lay people, 50 or 40% clergy, 50% men, 50% women, and so on, and so on.
In our area, we'll need a, we have a committee on location of the new Synod headquarters.
Okay.
So you got to have a real estate committee. You got to decide that, right? You got to decide where you're going to go, what you're going to have. So you got to talk about real estate, right?
And by that, we don't mean that they have to buy a building or whatever, but they have to go to a realtor, or they're going to rent, or whatever. How much space you're going to need? How many people you're going to have on board? How many people are going to be actually on staff and so on? What kind of space will that require? So that's a very important item also. So there has to be a committee for that.
Facilities, would that come under what this other gentleman was talking about?
Okay, so that equipment, huh? You have to have equipment. Somebody's going to have to worry about that in terms of equipping the office, and I think that comes under our real estate committee. What are we going to need? What kind of space are we going to require? What kind of computers are we going to have? Whatever. Is this going to be a computerized church or what? Okay?
There gets to be a computerized church. I hope they at least get some way to eliminate errors in 1 week instead of 1 year.
you can't talk to that computer, can you? And you get the mistakes in your bills, and you can never get the things straightened out, right?
That's the way it seems.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, Kent.
We have to have a committee to organize, plan the constituting convention for the new city.
All right, so the convention. So you have to have a constituting convention committee, right? We get this. So we have to put that together. They have to decide where they're going to go with this, what's going to be in their program, who's going to have the services, etc. That's something that has to get in place. And one of the problems with that is you almost have to do that right now, don't you?
Yeah.
Because convention spaces are spoken for, and if you're going to be in a hotel someplace, you got to be there. If you're going to be at a school, you have to get in there plenty early. So that has to be done. Yeah, that's correct.
They're allocating money for that, but it's supposed to be self-supporting, so the money will be returned afterwards.
Yeah, so they're going to charge all the individual congregations for it, but they have to have money up front. That's correct. Now that's a problem. Other areas to think of.
I think you're going to need a dispensary to pick up the headache tablets for all your men. Wow.
What have they been doing up till this time? Hasn't there been work on a constitution and some of those things when they've been meeting, when in the same meeting where they were arguing between Chicago and Milwaukee?
Yeah.
Are they doing some of this other work?
Oh, yeah. That's it. This contains the constitution for the national church, a model for synods, and a model for congregations. Now, this is not the final one. This was progress report number 7. So the additions, corrections, and so on will be offered to the churches before the conventions now in August. Yeah. So there was a constitution committee that put all that together. Yes?
At what point would they assess duplication or coming together of churches in different areas? Would that be now or is that later on?
January 1, 1988 is the start of the
day. No, but I mean you have two churches in a town. Would it be possible that those two churches might join as one church?
For sure.
And when would that be done? Right?
Well, that would be up to those individual congregations. That certainly would be within the province of those individual congregations to make that decision. Synods would not make that a decision. There might be some areas where the bishop would encourage that, or a synodical committee might encourage that. I can think of a situation in which, you're in Evansville, in Evansville, we have an AELC congregation which is worshiping in an Episcopal church, and then there's a struggling LCA congregation, and the bishop is trying to encourage those to come together. And from my side, I've been trying to encourage the ALC congregation to do the same. But that final decision is going to rest with those congregations. We can give that all the encouragement we want, but it's going to depend upon those congregations to make that decision. And we would not foist that on anybody. You know, we've got all kinds of rural areas where that should happen, inner city situations where that should be happening, but we can't force that. We just waited out an LCA parish in Indianapolis, which is down to 13, 14, most 18 people on a Sunday. You know, we had to wait till they decided. And the bishop couldn't go in there and say, you got to shut down. Now, it's different with the bishop of the Roman Catholic Church, right? He shuts it down when there's 80 families left. He says, you know, we can't afford this anymore. And he shuts it down. But we don't do that in the Lutheran Church. So those decisions will be made locally. Another committee, Skip.
You mentioned early on that we haven't gotten on there yet, what they call regional center for missions, or how will the synods in the same region cooperate together,
okay,
work together.
Now, one of the problems that we're doing, we can't monkey with that too much, and it's going to be a real problem for us, is we have to wait for the synods to get in place so that the representation from the synods can meet to create the region. Because the region will be created by a bishop from each of the synods that's participating in the region, plus a layperson that will be elected by the church council of the synod. And I think that's it, that those people come together, and then they're going to form the region. And so we can't prescribe too much for the region, but just about, well, as we get all the other committees on here that we need, many of those committees are going to be dependent upon what happens in the region or how they're going to use the region. Particularly, one of the areas that I'm concerned about is social ministry, campus ministry. That will be dependent upon regions. So that regional office thing kind of hanging in the air, but we have to be concerned about it all the time. It's hanging over our head. Now, you want to just share with us your experience.
Just a couple comments on that. In our region, the Bishop's Coordinating Committee is feeling that they have a responsibility to help design the region, regional center for mission. And yet that is a problem, as you say, because it's really supposed to serve the synods who aren't yet in place.
Yeah.
I think basically the only committee that is an action decision committee is the Constituting Convention Committee, because they've got to make those plans and organize it. I think the others are probably all going to be work committees and recommendation committees that will bring their recommendations to the Constituting Convention for yes, no, or modification. Is that about right?
As I understand it, the first meeting of the Synod will not decide anything besides elections and adoptions of the Constitution which will be recommended.
Wow.
That you don't understand it that way.
We're getting the word that these committees are not to make decisions, but to make recommendations to be acted on by the first Constituting Convention.
Okay.
That's what we're hearing anyway.
Okay. That's going to be interesting to see how that works out. Because it'll be, if we're going to do all of that, that's going to be an awfully long convention.
Yeah.
But I don't know how they can do it.
Yeah. But if it's not done until the year 1988, they'll be in limbo and not be able to do anything.
Yeah, probably some of it will be. That's why I think the transition teams are very, very important, to be able to negotiate in such a way that we not jeopardize what's in place, it's totally dependent upon the maintenance of the church at this point. You know. Let me give a couple of examples. I happen to be the chairperson of the task force on campus ministry and the one on social ministry in our area. And campus ministry is already in place. We've got that going. That's been in place for some time. We haven't tampered with that at all. So
all we did was go to them and say, well, now, you continue as you were going, what we'll have to worry about is ensuring that the finances come, that they flow to you. And that be the function then of the finance committee to work out a way in which we can ensure that the funds will be flowing. In the case of the social ministry, it's a different story. We don't have anything in the model constitution for synods on that, so we've got to compose something which we can recommend then will be adopted by the synod. But in the meantime, we have operations with all of the various welfare agencies that we have, that they're all keep on going, and we try to make contact with them as best we are able. But the big problem about what we adapt at that point, that's a very interesting one.
If I can follow that just a minute.
Yep.
If we didn't make any decisions on those recommendations at our constituent convention, what would some of these groups do until the next annual convention?
The groups like?
Let's say light, that's in-service training program. What would PLU do with the Siemens mission in Seattle? Is there some such a thing?
Well, those are light is a separate thing. The Siemens mission and all of that is part of the Lutheran Social Services package.
That would
come under whatever we decide to do with Lutheran Social Services. Light is a separate thing. My personal view about light is that we should not be so worried about how to address that institutionally. One of the transformations, from my point of view, is that we need to make pastors a lot more responsible for their continuing education and not deal with that institutionally, and so that they're in kind of a dependency relationship to it. They need to say, we need continuing education, this is what we need, and take responsibility for it. Mm-hmm. But there are lots of people that don't feel that way. They want some spigot up here that dribbles out sweet things that they can just come and fill their cup and don't have to have any participation in it. It isn't effective.
It's not going to work that way.
No.
Yeah.
And I think what you're talking about right now, for me, is an illustration of what is crucial, and it's a distinction between transition and transformation, and that is how we deal with the anxiety and the uncertainty. And if we've got to have it all in a row, from synods into regional, if we've got to have that all in a row before we go to that synod convention, we're going to have the old Lutheran Church in the new Lutheran Church. It's going to be our ability to hold our anxiety down and to trust that we can do it. We will move into the new Lutheran Church. We will examine what we have. We will adapt. We will... It's that trust that's going to make the difference. If we don't trust, if we come in with suspicion and looking for a hand grenade under every rock, we're going to just lockstep and go into the new Lutheran Church with all of the baggage that we should have sold off, and we're going to pay a big price for that.
That's very important what you say. Last January, I wrote an article for Partners Magazine, which goes to professional workers and three bodies. And I said, just what you're saying is that actually it would have been far better if we could have declared ourselves to be the new Lutheran Church and then work out things as we go along, as they come along. This idea of having to have it all in place before we get there, it just will not work. It's a horrendous problem.
And we won't be able to do it. It'd be far better if we can come in with a great deal of trust and say, okay, now what's it going to take for us to be the new Lutheran Church? That's far better. I mentioned this last week somewhere. My congregation supports a young man from Africa who's studying at the Lutheran School of Theology in Chicago. He comes out of Zaire. Zaire is 90% Christian. 90% Christian. Now that has been Christianized within the last century. And it's been Christianized by very highly fundamentalistic groups. But when they thought that they would bring all these people together to create the new Christian church in Zaire, they had been in touch with some of the ALC people in Tanzania, the Lutheran people there, and they liked what they heard. They liked Lutheran teaching and preaching. And so they decided to send this assistant of the new bishop in Zaire to go to the Chicago Seminary so he could learn Lutheran theology, then come back and write a confession for this new Christian church. And then they would start putting the church together the way it's been done. He said, now that's the way we do things in Africa. We achieve consensus first, and then we say, well, now what did we do? You know, how are we going to go about this? It happens to be the style in New Guinea. Some of us have relationships with the New Guinea church, and that's where they do things there too. Whole tribe comes into the church at one time because they achieve consensus. And it seems to me that that's the kind of thing that we should be working for, is that we say, now we are the church, now let's take our time and let's do it right. So let's be imaginative. Let's be creative in mission and ministry. Let's find new ways of doing this. How can we better serve our communities? How can we better serve our congregations? That's the way to come in. So I'm hopeful too. I think that as we put this together, it's going to be pretty lean for the moment. And that we are not good and cannot expect to have everything in place at first. But to make transformation, I think the transformation should take place over some time. The transition should happen now so that we're just shifting gears into this new Lutheran church. Well, we'll have to work out the details on that. How are we going to do that?
I think you hit a good point, and there are two extremes. I know one person in one of them who says, who would like to see everything just laid out ahead of time, all of them. And I've heard other people say we're going to come in with a very lean, thin constitution, just the essentials, and then let the new, you know, Senate work those things out.
Sure, because it's going to take both
extremes, I think.
It's going to take some real doing. Now, I know that in the social ministry committee that I'm chairing, that we have different philosophies there. You know, for example, in our area, the LCA had a huge commission for social ministry, but it only met once a year. And then they would try to thrash out all those problems. But they liked what they were doing because they said this was creative and it had a lot of participation by a lot of people. They kind of liked that style. A lot of us said, boy, it'd be far better if you had a smaller group that met more often, could be more current, could be dealing with it. So they're going to work that out. Is there going to be a compromise in that and so on? And that doesn't happen overnight that you achieve that. So worked it out.
Is it okay to talk about campus ministry?
Sure.
As an illustration?
We need campus ministry committee, right.
Okay. I'm on that task force out here. And what you said is right. Campus ministry is in place. And that's one of the things that we're bringing into the new Lutheran Church almost untouched. And that troubles me.
Okay. Now, what troubles you about?
Okay. Seems that the concept of the way campus ministry was formed in the late 40s has changed. The situation has changed, and the the concept of campus ministry needs to change, particularly in the way that it's funded. And you said, you know, the main concern as we move into the new Lutheran Church is to see that it is funded. And I agree. But I think that there needs to be a change in the way campus ministry is funded. And I think that the structure that we are bringing into the new Lutheran Church should have gone through some scrutiny.
Okay, tell us.
I'll tell you what I mean.
Tell us particularly about that funding, because I'm interested in that one too. I'm raising Cain about that one.
Okay. As I understand it, as it was handed down to me, the concept of campus ministry when it was formed was that it needed to be protected from the power structures of the church, and so it was created so that the power structures of congregations, not of the church. So the funding was channeled up from congregations to the national church and then back around to the local campus ministries. And the campus ministries are called by the national church, and they're placed in the local areas. They have a local board that has some say, but the lines of accountability are kind of blurred, and the purpose of that was intentional, so that the local people could not take a bite out of the campus ministry or the campus minister, and that they had some ability to function. I'm observing that situation has changed, and that what is needed is more accountability to the local situation, and also more responsibility for that ministry given to the local congregations. And we're not going to do that yet.
And I'm with you, and I hope you raise a loud voice over here, because my own situation in Indianapolis was that when I came to the parish that I'm serving, supposed to be the contact person with Butler University and the Medical Center, which is in Indianapolis, a division of Indiana University. And so I ran both places, and I sent the vicar over to the Butler, and I'd go to the Medical Center and read theology with the students there, and so on. Well, then, over to well, we were talking about campus ministry, and you were just describing the problems that you see in trying to put that together. But,
well, you're Harry.
Right. Yeah.
Phil.
Bill is there?
Phil. Okay. One of the things that I've observed about campus ministry, and it seems duplication now as we move into the New Lutheran Church with smaller synods. Campus ministry basically has its own system of bishops. And it seems to me that that's an unnecessary duplication. That ministry is not so different that it cannot be administered by the regular bishop of a synod. It may have, you know, maybe that's one of the original concepts that I observed that has changed, is that campus ministry today is very congregational. You know, the ones that are working, there are a lot of them that are trying to do the old model where you're going on retreats and talking about issues and all of that. But the ones that are working are very congregationally oriented. And
where are you from?
I'm from Eastern Washington.
Because that's not the case in California.
I know that, but there, I don't think some of those ministries are reaching a lot of students.
Like
they're
talking
doing
about
something else, and I guess that's what we need to be concerned about too: is what kind of a ministry do we want to have? What's our mission? We've got the model of United Ministries to Higher Education that is. Does not see as its mission ministry to students, and it is, they've merged, and now they're almost defunct because they've lost their mission. they merged, you know, Presbyterians, American Baptists, Episcopalians, Methodists are all together, and now they're having a hard time getting funding from all of those sources to maintain ministry. So it doesn't seem to be that that's the way to go.
Carol?
In California, they have a pretty strong campus ministry, I think, and most of them do not have congregations on the campus, and most of them are not connected to a particular church, although some of them may have a kind of local pastor that's nearby that kind of oversees some of the problems or some of the activities, but they use lay ministers a lot in the older young adults, and they spend a lot of time in counseling and contacting students and having Bible study and dealing with, say, women's issues
and worship.
And some worship, yes. And they're not. They may be in cooperation with an ecumenical board, and they may share. They may share some space with the local religious center on the campus, but they're not. They haven't lost their Lutheranness by any means.
Well, I guess the distinction I was trying to make and wasn't very clear is that it seems to me that the campus ministries that are working today, their focus is on a worshiping community. Mm-hmm. Where 20 years ago, you would hardly find a worshiping community on any campus. In any Lutheran campus ministry. Mm-hmm. A few, like in the University of Wisconsin, has had a long history of a worshiping community, and some of the campuses that are in the hotbeds of Lutheranism in the Midwest, but out in the West, there were, 20 years ago, there were hardly any worshiping communities that were part of the Lutheran.
I can think of USC, UCLA, and the University of Santa Barbara all have congregations on campus. I think that perhaps Humboldt, I don't think it has a pastor mm-hmm. on the campus who acts as the chaplain. I think of about 10 other sites that have non-ordained people who are in charge of that, and I'm not quite sure what their Sunday what their Sunday activity would be. I think that they do not have worship services on campus that are Sunday, but they do have midweek, say a Compline service or something like that. They may have a Matin service. They certainly have Bible study. They have a lot of counseling.
As I see the trend, it is towards creating worshiping communities wherever you can in the university communities. In our situation in Indianapolis, where I described, we had a loosely knit thing, and then my congregation made it possible for us to call a full-time person. And he works out of our congregation, actually. But is this fall to start a worshiping community on the campus of the university, because they feel that once there is such an operation that they have a much better foot in the door, there's much better continuing contact with the students. But there's a variety within campus ministry. Some situations where, like you see, there is a minimum of worship, but there is a great deal of counseling going on, creating different kinds of discussion groups. We have one up at Muncie, a lay professional there doing a real good job, having a real good experience there. But the real problem is, how are we going to fund this? How are we going to supervise it? That's the concern that we had. And how is the new synod going to do it? What kind of contact are you going to have? And there should be the opportunity for creating something new. Other kinds of ministries or whatever that we have concerns, the transition or task forces we have to do with.
Are there still doctrinal issues that will be worked out? Doctrinal issues? Or is that pretty much consensus now?
To my knowledge, it is. There is this consensus about the fact that we subscribe, to the ecumenical creeds, the Augsburg Confession and the Lutheran Book of Concord. I don't think that's been a problem, at least I don't know in your areas whether that's come up, has it?
Well, I'm flat about inerrancy creeds, but that seems to have died down.
That passed away. The compromise was worked out in the CNLC on that. So I think...
Polity is a bigger issue in our area than doctrine about the Word of God or something like that.
What's the chief concern about the polity?
Well, it's where the authority is going to rest, whether it's going to be with the congregation or whether it's going to be with the bishop or the national church or authority and, mainly authority. Yeah.
Authority to do what to do. Want to just to say who's king or prince or...
Right.
Title to you?
The CNLC has tried to talk in a new way about the relationships of the congregation, synod, and national church body. Talked about in terms of being interdependent, and that we can't think of it as being strictly a congregational system, nor should we think of it as being hierarchical, but it's interdependent. The national church is highly dependent upon what the local churches are going to be. And local churches are also dependent upon synods and the national church. So I'd like to think of it as being this way rather than just seeing it as a triangle.
I think one of the areas where that is unsure yet is the area of the regional church or the regional office of service and mission. And there's some uncertainty yet as to where support is going to come from and what the line of accountability will be. Is this going to be like the personnel at the regional office? There's talk back and forth about whether those people are going to be extensions of the national church, or are they going to be extensions of the synods? Are the synods going to determine what kind of resource personnel we have at this resource and mission center? Or is the national church and the publishing houses, is that going to be their thing? You know?
I was thinking that the other day when we were talking about all the functions of the congregation and what the congregation will do, it's kind of like you've got your own home. You don't invite somebody in to do a paint job or to fix the carpet or anything else unless you want them. Sure, there's a staff there or somebody able to do something. It's just like the store down the street. If you don't want to go down and buy something, you don't have to. You can ignore the.
But there's
ones up. Maybe they won't want to be ignored, is what you say.
What I'm saying is that one way of looking at that regional office is that you will pay for those people, whether you want to use them or not.
Okay.
And that's.
That's a sticky point.
That's a rough.
The other thing is, are they always snooping in and want to know how you're doing here and how you're doing there? They always want statistics. This many children in the Sunday school, how many people come to communion, all these things. Can the congregation tell them to keep their nose out of your business?
There's going to be dollars that is going to be there.
That's the only thing that counts?
But that's going to be the rub for congregations, is that if they have to pay for something that they don't want.
Well, the regional offices are to be created 3 months after the synods are in place. And they're to have 4 representatives from each synod. The bishop's representative, 1 representative of each of the church-wide units shall be in attendance. The bishop or the bishop's representative shall convene and preside at the initial meetings of the coordinating council. Then they are to organize themselves and then determine just what kind of services they would be providing. So my reading of it is that the regional centers are going to be the product of what the synods want them to be. You know, it won't be the other way around. The region will not be on top of the synods, but rather the region will be on the bottom. It'll be the servant of the synods. And they'll decide what the regional office is to be. I guess I indicated somewhere along the line that I thought that, and areas where we have heavy concentration of synods, but the regional offices will be very important to help work out what's going to be the strategy for a given state, like Pennsylvania or Minnesota. In areas where there's a very thin population, I think regional centers are going to be very important to strategize for a larger geographical area. Where the synods themselves are pretty strong, and but they're not as concentrated as Pennsylvania or Minnesota, there I think the regional offices will be much leaner. They won't be not as be important. So it's going to be what the synods want that regional office to be.
So there'll be great diversity.
I think there will, and the regions will be quite diverse, yes. And I think that's very good. I was speaking with Don Clausen this morning, and he was saying that, you know, he was for the idea of regional churches. And they said, well, the problem with regional churches is that then they might become separate churches. But these regional centers will enable us to attend to the peculiarities of a given area, a geographical area. We do know that the West Coast is different than the East or the Middle West. They all are different. And they will be able to minister to their peculiar needs.
I think we ought to call them regional service centers. I mean, they're kind of adopting that phrase out here, and I think that would be helpful.
The regional, is the word mission in them? Regional centers for mission. Regional centers for mission?
Well, that's what they say, but if they were called regional service centers, I think the emphasis
would be on the fact that they're serving the
synods. What services we as synods need, congregations need, then they would provide. We'd make it.
I guess I would opt for mission because it sounds like a place to go and get your oil changed.
The service station.
Yeah, the service center. Yeah. Or get some film strips. And it seems to me that it's a different task.
Any other kind of transition?
Clustering or what do you call it?
Conferences
or clustering. We have a group on that to try to decide.
What did you call your group? We called our group Building Community.
Well, ours is just clustering.
Okay. Clusters. Okay. And so your committee had to decide where the clusters were going to be.
Yeah.
And How many are you going to have? How many did you end up with?
I don't know. It was recommended there be 10 or 12 congregations in the cluster. And in some places that's a vast area.
Yeah.
Eastern Oregon.
And some places would be highly concentrated in the cities. We ended up with 10. I think that's pretty well average out for the cities that we probably end up with 10 clusters for conferences, whichever they're called.
Well, how is that? Part of the hierarchy, in other words, you have the volunteer.
So yes. Again, that's to serve the congregations, not the other way around.
How large is a synod, then, for instance? Is it by number of people in an area, or is it by number of churches?
The synods average out to 179 congregations. 179 congregations.
Regardless of
65 synods. So we decided on the synods first, and then they averaged out to 179. Some are a little larger than that, some are smaller than that. I think some are as small as 125. But the average is 179. Okay, Kay, yeah.
We had an interesting problem, a question that came up the last time our transition team met, and it was had to do with where do you put the kind of district news, I don't know if you have insert in the loop from standard.
Communications.
Where are the those kinds of the services going to be? Is it going to be under what would be the ALC Life of Mission section of the program maintenance section? We finally said no, it doesn't belong in program maintenance because it's too big, that it's too broad an area, it needs to go under services, but it doesn't seem to be housed any place, and that would include things not only like the trade winds is our local paper or the Southwest Lutheran or something is the LCA, but it includes things like the audiovisual team, the kind of the tape ministry. increase all those sort of special communication things.
Sure.
I want to know what anybody else is, if anybody else knows anything about that in their area.
Anybody else? Communications, is that what you're really concerned about?
Well, that, you know, if there was still going to be some kind of news that would come out of an area.
Oh, I'm sure there will.
Is it, because the regions, at least in the West, are very much bigger than a district. So are we going to move that down to the Senate level? And then you're dealing with a very much smaller, almost citywide LA region.
I'm sure certain clusters have their own papers, maybe they're going to continue in the future. You know, we have a cluster of, in the Senate congregations in Minnesota, they put out a newspaper regularly. So I don't think that's going to die, somebody will pick it up. And then, of course, you have the inserts into the National magazine. As of now, the talk is all about only one national publication. And that's going to have a special commission in the National Church. But I'm sure they all have their tentacles out to the various synods and that they have their own publication in there.
In your conversations, have you identified any obvious needs? Synods versus regions, you know, has that kind of surfaced?
Well, I mean, what happened was that I kept getting phone calls from the people that are involved in the, you know, especially we have a new videotaping ministry, and they didn't know where they fit. And I, you know, looked at as much stuff as I could. I didn't see where they fit either. And so that's where we've got a committee that's looking into that. Where might they be?